You're listening to Stateside. I'm Lester Graham. Every once in a while, we get a chance to sit down with an elected official for a while and get an update on what's important to them and to Michigan. And today, that official is U.S. Senator Gary Peters. Thanks for coming in.
Well, it's great to be with you, Lester.
I definitely want to talk to you about FBI Director James Comey's testimony and President Trump's tweets, but let's do that a little later. Let's get to some legislation you're sponsoring. And one is construction of a larger lock at the series of locks at Sault Ste. Marie. There are four locks making up the Sioux locks. Everybody talks about the Sioux locks as if we're supposed to know why they're important. So what do locks do?
Well, locks allow ships to go across areas that there's a change in elevation. So whenever there's a change in elevation, there's usually waterfalls or rapids. Obviously, a ship can't go through waterfalls and rapids, so they go through a series of locks to change elevation. And that's what happens at the Sioux Locks, which connects Lake Superior with the rest of the Great Lakes system. It is a critical place, given the fact that we get an awful lot of iron ore and other raw materials for steel production and other types of basic manufacturing that comes from both the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, but also from northern Minnesota. And
right,
the big
I've been to the taconite mines in Minnesota, and I don't know if everybody knows what taconite is. It's a low-grade iron ore, but it's critical to a lot of manufacturing and steel mills throughout the Great Lakes region. So we've got this one big lock. It's called the Poe Lock, and it lets bigger cargo ships go through. What size are we talking about here?
Well, it's the large ones, the 1,000-footers. So these are very large ships. So it's the only lock that can accommodate these 1,000-foot freighters, which is the bulk of the fleet. So that means about 80% of all of the material that goes through the Sioux Locks goes through just that one lock. And to put it in perspective of how much material it is, one ship is the equivalent of probably over 3,000 big trucks of material there, or hundreds of rail cars. So it's a very efficient way to move material, all loaded on these very large ships.
So one of these locks of the four can handle those ships. Why do we need another one?
Well, it's old. It needs to maintenance and extensive maintenance. And because it's old, should it fail in a catastrophic way, now you've suddenly shut down the movement of material. As I mentioned, over 80% of all the material that comes down from the iron mines, for example. It has been categorized by many people as the Achilles heel of manufacturing in North America, because if you don't have that raw material coming through, you can't make steel. And if you can't make steel, you don't make cars, you don't make appliances, and just go on down the list. In fact, the Department of Homeland Security has done a study, and they show that if there is a 30-60-day shutdown of that lock, the entire economy would actually go into a recession. In fact, they're talking about
the whole U.S. economy.
The whole U.S. economy. And that's why you have this Achilles heel. You lose, they're claiming, we could lose over 10 million jobs in the United States.
Well, let me play devil's advocate with that, because you've got rail cars. They could bring that iron ore down. You've got an import corridor in the Great Lakes. You could bring in Brazilian steel, and I know we do that. We ship that in. So why would it shut down the U.S. economy or cause a recession?
Well, it's and actually that is the important part of this study that was a flaw in previous studies, because there isn't really alternatives to move it. Let's say the 3,000 truck example, and that's just one ship. We don't have an extra 3,000 trucks just sitting around waiting to move iron ore.
Or rail cars,
or for that matter, truck drivers. There's a shortage of truck drivers already. But even more significant, now, so you don't even really have the ability to move it. But then when it gets to the steel mill, steel mills are designed to take that material from a ship and put it into the system. If a truck shows up with it, there are no systems to actually take it off a truck and put it in. There are all of the conveyor belts, all of the machinery is designed for shipborne. Now, you could build it, but you can't build it overnight. Then you'd have to build a whole new infrastructure. So, you know, the system is all very efficiently designed to take cargo off of a big ship coming in and offloading in mills both in Michigan, in Ohio, down the Chicago area.
I want to talk about this day. Everybody's talking about privatizing public assets. You know, trucking firms have to pay taxes on fuel and permits and licenses to drive on the roads. These ships don't pay anything toward the cost of infrastructure such as locks. Why should the government use taxpayer dollars to pay for this?
Well, they do pay. I mean, they pay into a larger fund that deals with dredging. It deals with locks. It's all part of a large government fund that supports all of that. So they do pay into that system.
In what way? What's charged? How are they taxed?
It's based on, I believe it's based on the amount of cargo. So the more cargo they carry, it's a charge based on the amount of material that they take. Bigger ships will pay more than smaller ships.
Fair enough. All right. While we're on the subject of the Great Lakes, let's talk about President Trump's proposed budget. The Great Lakes region dodged a bullet because it looked as though the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative would be cut to the bone right away this year. It wasn't for this fiscal year. But the Trump administration budget for next year calls for the complete elimination of the Restoration Initiative. And cuts to NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. We'll talk about that in a second. First, tell us why the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative is important.
Well, it's absolutely critical to maintain the quality that we have in the Great Lakes. And we have to remember, you know, step back as to why I think it's so outrageous to see this cut in the restoration fund. And something that has always received bipartisan support. This is something that folks in Congress understand is important. And if you think of the Great Lakes as a source of drinking water, over 40 million Americans drink water out of the Great Lakes. That's an incredible source of drinking water. To think that you wouldn't be working to constantly keep it clean and to make it cleaner, and to think that we have – we've talked about shipping. We've had commerce in the Great Lakes for many, many years, well before there were environmental regulations. We have toxic hotspots as a result of activities that have occurred over the years. Some of these hotspots continue to leach out into the lakes. Restoration funding is about cleaning that up, making sure that the water is not contaminated. It stays clean not only for current use but for future generations, not to mention all the recreational use, the fishing. It is an incredible economic asset for the entire country, which is why this restoration funding is so important.
Of the eight Great Lakes states, Michigan is by far the biggest beneficiary of money from the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative. It goes to the research, as you were talking about, restoring wetlands, cleanup, fighting the spread of invasive species, also really important. This work is done by both private entities and public entities and universities. How much money overall in a year is spent on those activities across the Great Lakes region?
Well, it's over $300 million has been spent on that, has been the appropriations. It should be more. So the fact that you actually zero it out is wrong. We have been able, as you mentioned in the, at the beginning, as we were able to keep that funding in the most recent budget. But now we're back at it here again in September when that funding comes to an end. This is not something that we should be fighting for every single year. This has in the past received bipartisan support. And just in terms of the amount of money relative to the federal budget, it is incredibly a small amount. And yet it has a huge, huge impact on probably the most important freshwater source in the world.
Let's talk about NOAA. It's got a Great Lakes Research Lab here in Ann Arbor. Why is that important?
Well, NOAA is the Oceanic Administration. It's about weather forecasting. It's about water quality. It's about marine sanctuaries. They have a wide range of missions. But if we just look at the cuts to NOAA in their weather forecasting, which is, I think, perhaps behind what is behind some of the Trump administration cuts, is that they're not big fans of facts or science, particularly if it comes to climate change. But NOAA monitors weather. It studies climate. It gives us information about what the future holds. And that's just so important for everyday business, for agriculture, to be able to forecast droughts, where floods may occur. Weather forecasting is about the economy on a day-to-day basis. And these cuts will seriously impair their ability to do that. In addition to research in the Great Lakes, the marine sanctuary, we have a very successful marine sanctuary up in the Alpena area, which has been a huge economic driver for northern Michigan and an incredible way to protect a large expanse of Lake Huron. These cuts would once again be very devastating to the Great Lakes, and particularly when you're looking at algae blooms that we saw in Lake Erie that had a very serious negative impact on drinking water for communities downriver as well as in northern Ohio.
Right. Toledo had a huge shutdown. Problem. Yeah.
And it's NOAA that gives us the information to handle those crises.
But Senator Peters, President Trump says he needs this money to build a wall along the Mexico-U.S. border to keep us safe. Now, which is more important, keeping us safe from illegal immigrants or keeping the water safe to drink, the fish populations healthy, the commerce through the Great Lakes shipping? I mean, come on.
Well, let me say first off, we do have to have secure borders. There's no question that our borders have to be secure. You maintain your sovereignty. But you also have to ask the question, how do you do that efficiently? Building a wall, folks who are in this profession for a living from Homeland Security tell you that a wall is not the answer. It is a lot more complex. In fact, it's curious that we have cuts in organizations like the United States Coast Guard, which will also impact us here in Michigan, but cuts to the Coast Guard in order to pay for a wall. And I have to remind the Trump administration, we have more water borders than we do land borders. If you cut the Coast Guard, that's part of Homeland Security. It's part of border protection. We have to be much more thoughtful about it. It makes, I guess, a good campaign slogan. You can get applause line at a rally, but it's not the most efficient way to keep our borders safe, which we do have to do, but we can be more thoughtful about it.
Let's talk about pipelines. After the largest inland oil spill in the nation's history caused by a ruptured Enbridge pipeline near the Kalamazoo River, people in Michigan are concerned about oil and gas pipelines. A lot of concerns about Enbridge Line 5, which goes under the Straits of Mackinac. If that were to break or rupture, the scenario does not look good for the Great Lakes. Even with the least severe computer models, it looks bad. But the most severe predict shorelines of Lake Huron and Lake Michigan would be oil-soaked. That's something that goes beyond party positions. Republicans and Democrats alike are concerned about it. Elected officials in both parties want Line 5 shut down. What can Congress do?
Well, there's a variety of things we can do, and I agree our long-term goal needs to be to shut down this pipeline. And you mentioned the potential catastrophic impact of it. In fact, a University of Michigan study was very clear. It said that the absolute worst place to have a pipeline break anywhere in the entire Great Lakes Basin is the Straits of Mackinac. And so that's unacceptable risk. I have taken a number of actions in Congress until we get to the point where we shut it down to make sure that we're dealing with it. But we also have to be dealing with pipelines all through the Great Lakes region. That Line 5 is a problem not just for the Straits of Mackinac. It runs the whole length of the UP, very sensitive ecological areas. A pipeline break there could also get into the Great Lakes. And so I was able to get two pieces of legislation passed last year. One will now categorize the entire Great Lakes Basin as a high-consequence area, which means it's subjected to the most vigorous federal oversight of any other pipeline. So the whole basin is now in that area. And I was also able to get language to require companies to, when they have a response plan, should there be a break, to consider ice cover. Surprisingly enough, that was never a requirement. And think of the Straits of Mackinac, how difficult it would be.
Yeah.
So just think of the Straits of Mackinac, how difficult it is to clean it up already. The currents are strong. They go east. They go west. The amount of water that goes to the Straits is equal to 10 times that of Niagara Falls. And so now imagine a thick layer of ice over all of that. The Coast Guard, in hearings before my committee, basically in answer to a question of mine, said, no, we're not very comfortable. We could actually clean up a spill with thick ice. So now we'll require that. And that leads to the legislation that I just recently introduced with Senator Stabenow that now increases the liability for pipelines that are in the Great Lakes. Currently, Great Lakes pipelines and straits in the Straits, Line 5, is considered an onshore pipeline. So there's liability caps. The company doesn't have to pay for all of the cleanup, only up to the cap. But if you're an offshore pipeline, it's unlimited. You have to pay every single penny of cleanup. And so the bill we've introduced says that Great Lakes pipelines, particularly Line 5, is an offshore pipeline. And I challenge anybody, go stand on the banks of the Straits and look out. That's offshore. That's not an inshore pipeline that's going through that area. So you'll have unlimited liability. The company will also have to prove they actually have the resources to cover what would be an extremely expensive endeavor. And that also gives the Secretary of Transportation the power to shut down a pipeline if it is determined that they do not have the ability to conduct that cleanup, either financially or perhaps because of weather conditions. If there's ice cover and you can't clean up a disaster, at a minimum, you should not be operating that pipeline during the time there's ice cover.
Do you have votes for that?
Well, you know, the previous two that I mentioned, the Great Lakes Basin as well as the ice cover, I received nearly unanimous support. So those were both put into law. So now I've introduced this legislation. And I have found that many of my colleagues on a bipartisan basis, but probably more important on this issue, sometimes these issues become regional when folks say, why do I worry about the Great Lakes because I live in Nebraska or Wyoming or wherever it may be, that people are coming to the realization that the Great Lakes are a national asset, not a regional asset.
Let's talk about what's going on in Washington. Robert Mueller, the special counsel, is looking into Russia's tampering with the elections last year. It's looking into criminal acts. The investigative committees in the House and Senate really have the job of going beyond just the criminal acts and finding out for the people, just what the heck happened and what's being done to make sure that it doesn't happen again. That's a tall order. How capable, how well-equipped is Congress to do that?
Well, I do have confidence that the Senate Intelligence Committee is working very diligently, has the ability to collect the information. We saw the hearing, the recent hearing. I think they did a very good job of questioning both Mr. Comey and other folks that they've had before the committee. My concern is the Intelligence Committee sometimes does things in a classified setting, and I do believe that we have to have full transparency. The American people need to know exactly what happened, what exactly are the facts. But they are going forward, and I support what they do. But I do think it is critical that we have this special prosecutor, special counsel now appointed. I was very pleased by that. I've been calling for that for a long time. And I believe that he needs to follow the facts to wherever those facts go. And hopefully we can get this done sooner rather than later.
What was your takeaway from former FBI Director James Comey's testimony yesterday?
Well, it's obviously a lot of what he testified about we already knew is in the paper. It confirmed that, though. I think he presented himself extremely well and as a very credible witness. But it was obviously very troubling to have the types of actions done by the president of the United States, statements that he made, the conduct that he was engaged in is unprofessional and may have crossed the line of obstruction of justice as well. So I don't think anyone could feel good about the president after hearing that testimony, and particularly hearing the director of the FBI basically saying he didn't trust the president and thought he would lie about whatever happened.
Those voters who solidly backed President Trump believe this is a witch hunt, as he has called it. They just want the news media and Congress, people like you and me, to just help Trump, our president, get his work done. What do you tell people who let you know that that's what they want?
Well, certainly we have to get work done. I don't disagree with that. It's important for us to come together to find common ground. We have a number of incredibly serious and important issues that we have to deal with as a country. And the only way we can do that, I think, is coming together and try to find bipartisan solutions to these issues as well. But having said that, we've got some very serious concerns about what happened with the Russian involvement in the election. And no one questions the Russians were involved. In fact, I think Mr. Comey did a great job of really outlining how serious it is to have a foreign power engaged in the most fundamental aspect of our democracy, which is the election, that we have to get to the bottom of this. I think the Russians need to pay a lot larger price than they've paid. They need to know there are consequences for their activities. And if you have members of the Trump administration that were colluding, that is an incredibly serious charge, and it's a real cloud over the administration right now. And that's why I think having an independent investigation, this should not be partisan. This should just be about America. This is not about party. This is about our country. Having a special counsel and prosecutor who is looking into that is important. And as I mentioned, it has to happen quickly because there's no question this is a cloud getting in the way of the important business of the American people. But on the other hand, it is important in facts. Facts should drive the ultimate conclusion.
That is Gary Peters, U.S. Senator from Michigan. Thanks for spending some time with us.
Oh, always a pleasure. Thank you.